Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
WWE is eliminating the overrun for Raw. A note about Shane McMahon winning the World Cup of Wrestling, or being known as the best wrestler in the world. How long is Brock Lesnar around for? And we're going to watch along with a match from Survivor Series 1996 this week. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all of the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. All of our podcasts are also available in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, I got through the read pretty clean. Yeah. I'm excited for the watch-along later in the show. I've forgotten about how much has actually happened in and around the Steve Austin Bret Hart match. But Mike, how are you this week?
Oh, I'll tell you, Jimmy. I mean, it's Veterans Day weekend. It's my mom's birthday this weekend. Had a great time with family. Thanksgiving coming up. I love this time of year. Survivor Series. Overall, I can't complain. How are you this week?
I'm good. I'm relatively good.
Excellent.
Thank you for asking. We're going to do some news items before we get to the watch along. If you want to go to the WWE Network, it's Survivor Series 1996. The time cue on the network is 1 hour, 31 minutes, 14 seconds. 1 hour, 31 minutes, 14 seconds. It should be a long shot of Madison Square Garden. If it's not, it's a close up of Bret Hart taking off his ring jacket, putting his shades on, something like that.
And Jimmy, as the listeners know, you and I chose two matches to put up on a poll, which we did last week. We didn't announce it on the show. We just did it via Twitter on our Twitter page at WrestleCast95. And this one won the poll, 1996 Survivor Series, as Jimmy just said there, Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. It had 45% of the vote, 24% 1991 Undertaker Hulk Hogan, and 20% went 1987 Team Hulk Hogan versus Team Andre the Giant. The 11% 1993 at the Boston Garden, Team Hearts against Shawn Michaels and the Knights. But again, 96 Survivor Series where we're watching today.
People hated that 93 show at the Boston Garden.
Yeah, it wasn't that good. I couldn't advertise it on the poll there of the Owen Hart heel turn because of the limited lettering on Twitter there. But that was the match. That's where it happened.
Yeah, and as I was doing my research on this 1996 Survivor Series match, there's a lot of stuff that happened before this match took place. And quite frankly, this match almost didn't take place. But we'll get to that. We will get to that. There's a lot of stuff. I was very excited. There's a lot of, I think before I edited it down, I had about 20 pages of notes on this thing.
Wow.
But I cleaned that up. You will not hear me do 20 pages of notes. Don't worry about that. But before we get there, the lead story to me is Brock Lesnar, as it has been a lot of these weeks. I feel like we do say that a lot, but he's one of the higher paid performers in WWE, and Vince McMahon has this fascination with him, and he's main evented a lot of shows. So I feel justified in continuing to have Brock Lesnar as a lead story here on the podcast. Here's what Meltzer had to say. Quote, Lesnar's latest short-term contract was to expire with Crown Jewel. Roman Reigns was planned to win the three-way match over Lesnar and Braun Strowman, presumably pinning Lesnar, and Lesnar was to leave for UFC. In probably the first of several major changes after Vince McMahon found out that Roman Reigns was suffering from leukemia, he backed up the Brinks truck and signed Brock Lesnar to a new deal and made the decision for him to beat Braun Strowman in Saudi Arabia and regain the championship. It is believed that the deal went down around October 18th. The terms of the deal have been kept secret. What is known is that this is another short-term deal. The deal does go through WrestleMania. How often Lesnar will be working on the new deal is unknown. He will be at Survivor Series facing AJ Styles. He won't be at TLC. It is not clear if he'll be at the Royal Rumble, but given they are doing a stadium show, he will probably be there. And he has a planned match at WrestleMania. There is a significant angle that is supposed to be part of his storyline going forward. The deal includes wrestlers other than Strowman. Seth Rollins did mention his name on Raw, and Drew McIntyre is clearly being groomed for a top run. Unquote. That's a lot of information to digest, Mike. Your initial thought?
I love the Drew McIntyre situation there down the line, because when you and I were sitting at the house show in Boston, I don't know if you remember or not, Jimmy, but I made a comment to you during that tag team match with Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. I think they were fighting
Shield. It was Ambrose and Rollins.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so I made a comment. I'm like, Drew McIntyre is ready to go singles. And here we are, less than a month later. It looks like that's on the horizon here. The Braun Strowman situation, easy matchup for them at the Crown Jewel. But again, to my point last week with why they brought him back and winning the championship at Crown Jewel was to get him, get the company into the Survivor Series, because he worked so well with AJ Styles last year at that match. A lot of people were very down on it going into it, and it actually turned out to be a really good match because AJ Styles works great with it. But for the foreseeable future with Brock Lesnar going into WrestleMania, having that contract until then, it makes total sense. He's a draw. You have the Royal Rumble in a huge stadium. It's a baseball stadium. Potentially, you may have The Rock there like we mentioned last week. And now, again, WrestleMania in New York with a big name of Brock Lesnar. That just makes the perfect sense in the world. And he's probably going to have that Universal title definitely through the Royal Rumble, maybe even through WrestleMania. So get ready, whether you like it or not, he's going to be the Universal champ going into 2019.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. But to me, Seth Rollins should be the Universal champion. Like, mm-hmm. I thought about this, and I'm trolling the internet a little bit when I say Brock Lesnar. I want to see the internet explode, but Seth Rollins right now is the guy on Raw, and he should be rewarded as such. And he is the Intercontinental Champion, so not to take anything away from him, but he should get to that next level and be the Universal Champion, right, and put the Intercontinental Championship on either Finn Balor or Elias or Dean Ambrose, somebody like that. Mm-hmm. As far as Drew McIntyre goes, I really liked his first run in WWE, and Vince probably looks at him and he says he's got the size and that it factor. I don't view him as world championship material. When he won the NXT championship, I groaned. I just kind of feel like he's more of an intercontinental guy or a guy who touches the main event from time to time, but I don't see him as the WWE or Universal champion. I hope he proves me wrong and he's a successful guy, but here might be a bigger question is, why do they go back to Brock Lesnar? Are they worried about main event guys? And to this, I ask this question, and I ask it to myself first, and I want your input on this. Who do I view as the Raw Universal Champion or the WWE Champion? Here are a handful of names: AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, Braun Strowman, Kevin Owens, Jinder Mahal, Daniel Bryan, Jeff Hardy, The Miz, Rusev.
Universal Champion.
Or WWE Champion.
Okay.
Like the main event guy, the guy who you put on the top billing of the card and you know that you're going to get a good match and people are going to be invested in that match. Mm-hmm. Those are my guys who I view as Raw Universal Champion or SmackDown Live WWE Champion. Put Brock Lesnar on that list, obviously, too. He's the current reigning and defending. I don't see Drew McIntyre in that spot.
No.
He's missing something for me.
Yeah. I mean, they're obviously, it's the size thing.
He's 6'7". He's 330, I think.
He's a big guy. He's huge, you know, and I think that's where they could see him going up against a Braun Strowman, two guys like that. Now, did you throw, I heard your stuff there, but did you say Dolph Ziggler? Did you throw him in there?
I did not put Dolph Ziggler in there. Okay, and the reason why I didn't put Dolph in there is because I feel like he's had his opportunities at the championship and the crowd just doesn't buy into him.
All right. Not that they.
And I love Dolph. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to see him get another run with the championship, but I don't think that the audience sees him as a main event player.
Well, I think he's the kind of guy where we've seen him as a heel where, you know, you put the belt on him, he's so easy to hate. So it could work. It potentially could work. And
I also, by the way, think that the powers that be don't see Dolph Ziggler as WWE championship material.
No, they don't, unfortunately. But
because they won't let him be the next Shawn Michaels.
This is true, because he definitely has a caliber. I like your list there, though, for what you have for those guys. And I can't really disagree or make any other change to that. I think those are all in my category, too, for who I consider as a champion as well. But, again, going back to Brock Lesnar here, something popped into my mind here, too, Jimmy. Something else popped in my mind. It hasn't officially been announced, and I'm not going to try to sidetrack here just a little bit. I just thought of this real quick. WrestleMania 36, most likely to be in Minnesota. That's probably going to be announced at some point in the next few months, I'd say. I think that's a perfect scenario for Brock Lesnar to be inducted into the Hall of Fame at WrestleMania 36, retired from the company. That's it right there.
Well, they can put people in the Hall of Fame and have them not retired.
This is true. Or have a retirement match.
But I mean, if you're telling me that Brock Lesnar is going to headline Minnesota, then yes.
Yeah, it just makes sense.
Because he's probably going to headline New York. It's probably going to be Brock Lesnar against The Rock.
Well, and it's shaping up to be that way if we all get the what we want here, especially with the Royal Rumble, too, to get The Rock there.
Well, but, Mike, remember, the most important person, and he gets what he wants, is the Prince of Saudi Arabia.
Money talks.
He gets what he wants.
Yeah. Just back to your list, though. I'm on board with it, though. The Daniel Bryan thing, I know you mentioned him in there, you know, and it looked like that he was kind of being brushed under the rug, and he doesn't deserve that. He deserves that push. Seth Rollins would be a great champion. He really would. And I think I could see Seth as the guy to potentially take down Brock Lesnar after a WrestleMania or something along the lines there upon the return of Roman Reigns. When that does indeed happen, when he gets healthy, I could totally see that happening with Seth Rollins being that guy. That would be a great run as champion.
It'll kind of be interesting to see how they do the AJ Styles Brock Lesnar match, and you know, I have a thought on that when we close the show. But staying focused on the championship right now, my last thought on this is what WWE should have done was they should have put Samoa Joe on Raw and made him the Universal Champion, because this guy is a main event player, and I'd be very disappointed if he didn't get either a run with the Universal Championship or the WWE Championship before his WWE contract expires, because I think Samoa Joe is just that good. He's believable. He's tough. His promos are excellent. His ring work is phenomenal. He should be the champion at some point of one of the two major brands. Not just NXT.
Yeah. Yeah, and he could be the guy that ends AJ Styles' run. It could happen. You know? Yeah, when the record's broken. I mean, we're looking at January now, right? When the record is broken.
January 15th, I believe, is the kayfabe metric.
I could totally see that happening at the Royal Rumble. Samoa Joe is your new champion.
I think AJ holds it until at least WrestleMania, and it's The Miz who beats him.
The Miz. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I could just see Samoa Joe breaking it, and then AJ maybe getting it back at WrestleMania, and then going into a feud with The Miz. So we'll see.
More SmackDown fun, and in this case, relating to Shane McMahon and winning the World Cup of Wrestling, the best wrestler in the world, whatever they're calling it. Meltzer wrote this, quote, "It was meant to lead to a Shane McMahon heel turn, or at least in its original form. This angle was planned long in advance," unquote. So this wasn't an audible call, as I had thought. Mm. This is something that they thought out. To which why do we need Shane McMahon as a villain? Why do we consistently need a villain authority figure? Bring me back to the days of Jack Tunney of WWF Presidents again.
Yes.
Just put him on TV when he's really needed. Otherwise, keep these villain authority figures off my television. I'm done with them. I'm all set with them. I don't need them anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, not only do you have, you know, Shane and Stephanie as the commissioners there, what's the point of even having a general manager? Too many authorities. Just have one. It's all you need. You know, I don't know if I'm buying into that report there with this not being an audible as planned ahead. That's got to be an audible, Jimmy. It's got to be.
It felt like it, but I didn't have the commentary on. I won't go back and watch it.
No.
But they, so the giveaway is Triple H really tore his pectoral muscle.
Yeah. Surgery.
And they did an update on it, and The Miz has no update on his ankle.
Hmm. Okay. So, whatever. I'm not going to.
So they got me.
Yeah. Well, but I like it, though, like we talked about last week. And in the end, it's what the Prince wanted, and he got it.
Yep. The Prince wanted to see Shane McMahon win a match, so he got that.
The Royals win.
Yes. In a move that's probably about 10 years overdue, the overrun to Raw is being eliminated. So Raw will end at 11 p.m., not 11:07 or 11:15, but 11 p.m., what's called a hard timeout in the media business. This is a good move by WWE and the USA Network. The overrun, you don't need anymore. You're not competing against anybody. You're competing against yourself. And here's an idea. Develop a character. Develop a really good, interesting character. Try that for once.
Yeah. I think it's... You know, why can they not have done this before when you look at the Tuesday night show, SmackDown, hard, out by 10 o'clock?
Yep.
Right? Out. And, yes, it's a better show. We've talked about that. 2 hours. You have so much more crammed in. There's no excuse why this should not have been done before. So, good for them. Good for USA putting their foot down, saying, hey, you're done by 11. That's it. Or whatever sort of agreement there is there. But that's it. Thank God. No issue with this. Very, very pleased.
I think everybody's applauding for less time. Now, if they could just knock out that third hour, I think we'd all be a little bit more happier.
Amen to that.
So next, watch along with us one of my favorite matches of all time, Bret Hart versus Steve Austin at Survivor Series 1996.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We put up the poll. The votes were disappointing, but for those of you who did vote, you voted for Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from Survivor Series 1996. I really wanted to do Team Hogan versus Team Andre. I did like the Hulk Hogan Undertaker option because it's a time where I really would have had to do a ton of research since I couldn't recall a lot of the stories surrounding the match or the news items of the time other than Ric Flair had just shown up. So it would have been a good thing to do. It would have been a fun thing to do. Time cue on the network. WWE Network is 1 hour, 31 minutes, 14 seconds, Survivor Series 1996. Mike, I was very rude and I interrupted you. I'm not sorry for doing that, but go ahead.
Of course not. No, of course you're not. That was my vote, 91 Survivor Series, Undertaker, Hulk Hogan. It was like the real first pay-per-view that I was heavily invested on. But this one here in 96, very excited that it won, and I'll save it for the match here. When we began going to Madison Square Garden, 96.
All right. 1 hour, 31 minutes, 14 seconds. Survivor Series 1996. What you'll see is Bret Hart turn to his left, looking at his opponent. And I'm going to hit play here in 3, 2, 1. So we see Bret Hart now looking at the hard camera, Steve Austin, the opponent, staring down Bret Hart. Before we get into the story of this match, there's a lot of stuff that happened around this match and before this match. And quite frankly, this match almost didn't happen. Before we get to Steve Austin and Bret Hart, it's only Vince McMahon and Jim Ross on commentary. Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect, was supposed to be the third voice, and he no-showed the event. Kurt Hennig had made a deal with WCW to make the jump from the WWF commentary vote booth to an in-ring competitor with WCW. WWF Legal, of course, ended up blocking this, and Kurt Hennig didn't debut until August of 1997. Mike, do you remember Mr. Perfect? Did you like him as a color commentator?
I did. In fact, I thought he was, okay, obviously remember him in the ring, and his theme music was awesome. Curtis Axel, his son, we know now. Loved him on commentary. Great heel commentator. He was actually good on the primetime wrestling, too, with Bobby Heenan at the desk there and Hillbilly Jim at one point. But I do remember Kurt Hennig. And actually, Jimmy, at the beginning of this event, Survivor Series 96, Jerry Lawler was there, too. But then he was in on one of the matches, the Survivor Series matches. So you're right. It is just Vince and JR here. And a young Mike Riley, seventh grade at the time, just still in the phase of believing in Santa Claus, too. I mean, I still do. I think Santa's coming to my chimney on December 24th. I was all in. I had no idea until Jim Ross said that I got fired by Vince McMahon about 3-4 years ago by the owner. I had no idea that Vince was the owner. That's how under wraps they kept all this stuff. I was shocked until Jim Ross said that during that particular fall.
I couldn't tell you the moment that I knew Vince was the owner. I'm sure I read it at some point in one of the Bill Apter PWI magazines, but I couldn't tell you the exact moment that I figured out that Vince McMahon was the owner of the company.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously if I were older, I would have figured it out because his dad was the founder and all that and so forth. But that's officially when I found it out. That was the night that the fake Razor and Diesel debuted, and he got right on the microphone and absolutely grilled Vince. So there they are working together, and it's like the real last full year Vince was on commentary.
Steve Austin working the arm over Bret Hart, and on Mr. Perfect, I loved Mr. Perfect. The vignettes were great. An underrated match of mine was his WrestleMania 5 match against Owen Hart, the Blue Blazer. Loved Mr. Perfect. Wish he hadn't have had that run in 1993 because he wasn't the same Mr. Perfect aside from, I think it was the King of the Ring match with Bret Hart, which I think was that year.
Correct.
Him and Shawn Michaels should have had a better match at SummerSlam, but they didn't. Something kind of worth noting on the intros, and I was going to rewatch this match, and then I stopped it during the intros because I wanted to watch it fresh. Vince and JR talk a lot about the star power Steve Austin has and how the crowd reacted to Austin. Bret, of course, got a huge ovation. It's his return match. It's Madison Square Garden.
First match since WrestleMania 12.
First match since WrestleMania 12, and we'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. But just they were kind of foreshadowing what they believed, and specifically Jim Ross was believing Steve Austin was. And Steve Austin was really on the uptick, which there are some talking points to this and when that uptick actually started. But his Bret Hart's first match on TV since WrestleMania 12, when he lost the WWE Championship to Shawn Michaels in one of the most overrated matches in the history of pro wrestling. Mike, do you remember the Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12? What did you think of it?
I thought it was, agreed, very overrated. I lost a lot of interest probably about 20 minutes into it.
Because you knew it was going the hour with no falls?
Yeah, it just was like, all right, enough. Do we really have to sit through this? Because that was actually a pretty decent undercard. You had The Undertaker and Diesel. You had that Hollywood Backwood Brawl there.
Yeah, Triple H and The Warrior.
The Warrior return. Yeah, it wasn't that bad.
Steve Austin versus Savio Vega.
Exactly, that Caribbean strap match there, who at the time he was the ringmaster. So it was like, this is a good pay-per-view. I just stop right now. Or just there's no need to have an Iron Man match. This was just perfect. Overrated match. The only good thing about it, I think, was Shawn Michaels' entrance.
Oh, where he came from the ceiling?
Raptors. Yep.
Yeah, that was cool. And, of course, Shawn telling Bret to get the bleep out of my ring. Yeah. That was classy. Yep. That was good. Nice nice job, Sean.
Yep. By the way, we should pay respect to Jose Lothario, who passed away this past week.
And we just did.
There you go.
Bret Hart walked out after that loss and only had a commitment of overseas matches remaining on his WWE contract. A series of matches, including some against Steve Austin. While Bret was off TV, Steve Austin was on the uptick. He had won the King of the Ring tournament. Austin 316 was beginning to grow. And in fact, the Warrior no-showed WWF events. Bret Hart was called to be a replacement and told Vince McMahon flat out no. Up until what Meltzer would write in the October 28th newsletter. Bret Hart almost signed a contract with WCW, and this match against Steve Austin almost didn't happen. Meltzer wrote, Bret Hart, quote, Bret Hart agreed to a 20-year contract with the World Wrestling Federation just prior to making the announcement of his return on the live Monday Night Raw show from Fort Wayne, Indiana, on October 21st. It was during the interview in Fort Wayne that Bret Hart announced he would be with the WWF forever and said something about Shawn Michaels really bugs him and that he'll face Steve Austin in this match. Bret Hart reportedly told Eric Bischoff that he wanted a penny more than Hulk Hogan when Eric Bischoff went to Los Angeles to meet with Bret Hart and ask him about a WCW contract.
Mm-hmm.
As Steve Austin hits a stun gun here on Bret Hart, of course, that was one of his finishers in WCW here. It's just a high spot.
Yeah, more or less like a middle relief move.
So Meltzer wrote, the contract Hart was looking at from WCW guaranteed him $2.8 million per year over 3 years. I believe this is the contract that about a year later Bret Hart would get from WCW.
Right.
I believe Eric Bischoff on his podcast disputed that there was an actual offer made from WCW to Bret Hart.
He did, and I heard that on 83 Weeks. He did. You are right about that. Yep.
So the theory, of course, is that Bret told Meltzer so that Vince would panic and get more money from Vince McMahon because he didn't want to actually leave WWF. So he probably did ask Eric Bischoff for a stupid amount of money, and Bischoff never actually offered it to him. But Bret and Meltzer, as we found out when the Montreal Screwjob happened, Bret was a main source for Dave Meltzer in the transcripts of that. And if you haven't read that those issues of the Wrestling Observer, I would suggest highly to do so because it's essentially the transcript of Vince McMahon and Bret Hart in Montreal in the room talking about the finish to the Shawn Michaels match where Bret was screwed.
And watch that documentary too, Wrestling with Shadows.
Fabulous documentary.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I think A&E did it but it was really good. It was all from Bret's perspective going into it and the cameras backstage. Really, really good stuff.
And by the way, if Bret Hart doesn't have that offer, quote unquote, from WCW and doesn't have a, I don't want to use that term because we'll talk about guns in a second. If he doesn't have Vince McMahon's proverbial back against the wall, that documentary never gets made because there's no way that Vince McMahon lets cameras into his organization with as much access and editing power as they have.
Well, especially in 2018, never going to happen. No way.
But WWF and Vince were up against the wall. They felt like they needed Bret Hart back, and Bret got a lot of things in that contract, in his WWF contract, that Vince would have never given. There is another interesting note to this, and this gets to the point where this match in 1996 of Bret Hart versus Steve Austin, which if you're watching along with us right now, Steve Austin has a chin lock on Bret Hart. They're down on the canvas grappling. This match almost didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because this is on Bruce Pritchard's Something to Wrestle podcast. Bruce said that if Bret wasn't coming back to the WWF, that Hulk Hogan was in play for a return. Yes, Hulk Hogan, just months after the beginning of the NWO angle, could have been back in the WWF.
Right.
So my question, if Bret Hart signs with WCW and Hulk Hogan goes back to the WWF, how do the Monday Night Wars turn out?
Right.
What happens with Hulk Hogan? What does Vince McMahon do with Hulk Hogan? Mike, what do you think? Hypothetically speaking.
I mean, he very easily could have been you could have seen Hulk Hogan versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, the match that we never saw.
Hulk Hogan once refused to work with Steve Austin in WCW when Steve Austin was stunning Steve Austin. And in turn, years later, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin refused to work with Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 18.
Correct. And that would have been, I don't know, I think that ship had sailed by then, WrestleMania 18, but if that had happened in 96, you know, still Hogan, yeah, okay, he's out of the prime from where he was in the 80s and so forth, but still a name, you know who he is, and it just revolutionized the whole sport of it. That would have been something else. That really would have been something else. Not that Austin wasn't passed the torch. He carried it, but that really would have been the ultimate passing of the torch from one generation to another if that had happened. Think about that.
Well, my thought process is if Hogan goes back to WWF, he's going back in the red and the yellow. And I say that because I felt like Vince McMahon couldn't wait to switch Hogan back when the NWO invaded WWF right before WrestleMania 18 in Toronto. That's just a vibe.
Well,
Hulk had probably been away from WWF for a few years, which was long enough where people may have been clamoring for it again like they were.
Right. And can you blame Vince, too? Does he really want the NWO character? That's something that he did not create in his company? No, he wants the red and yellow. He wants the All-American, the real American Hulk Hogan in that situation there. So to have him potentially have a feud with Stone Cold Steve Austin, that would have been a dream scenario. Something else I read up on here, too, before this match. This is only the first of, let me see, one, two. They only fought four times, Stone Cold Steve Austin and Bret Hart. And this was the first time that they did fight here. Survivor Series 96.
On television, you mean?
Television, yeah. Let's put it that way. Thank you very much.
On television, because before Bret Hart came back for this match, they were involved in some overseas tours, in the Kuwaiti Cup, those series of matches. I think, ironically enough, in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, no way. Okay. Yeah, that's how ironic. How perfect.
But they had wrestled a few times before on international tours between WrestleMania 12 and the Survivor Series. That was Bret's commitments. He had already been promoted for those matches overseas, so he wanted to live up to those commitments, and he got to fight, I think it was Steve Austin, the British Bulldog, Triple H. I think he fought Undertaker on that tour as well.
Sounds right. And Bret is such a great technical wrestler.
Even though here he's coming off the top rope with an elbow.
Yeah, terrible timing for me to say that.
Excellently executed, might I add.
Oh, yeah, by the excellence of execution himself there. In Stone Cold Steve Austin, we get to see his technical, I guess, skills in this match, too. It's really unique. I guess it shows how good Bret Hart is to bring out the best in someone else.
Well, Bret Hart on that Fort Wayne in Indiana interview said that Steve Austin was the best wrestler in the world. And at this time, there's a good case to be made for that. Of course, Steve Austin would later be battered with injuries and would have to adapt to a WWE good guy style, which is basically brawling all over the place.
Right.
And he adapted well to that because Steve Austin is just such a great performer.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. And, you know, the other four times that they did fight, obviously, after this one, because the pay-per-view after this, it was Bret versus Psycho Sid. And then the Royal Rumble, that's where Austin came back in to the Rumble, and he won 97. Then they had that four-way showdown in February, and then he fought Bret at WrestleMania 13 for the double heel turn. And then at the, or not double heel, but you know what I mean.
The double switch. They turned Bret heel, and they turned Austin to the good side.
Yeah, with Ken Shamrock. The month after that, In Your House, Revenge of the Taker, Austin beat Bret in a disqualification, and then they fought one more time, the last time, one-on-one, April 21st, 1997, Monday Night Raw. Austin injured Bret in a street fight, and then for the final time on television, they were in a 10-man tag at the Canadian Stampede. It was the Hart Foundation with Bret, Owen, the Bulldog, Neidhart, and Pillman. Can you believe all those guys are dead except Bret Hart? That's really sad. Again, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Ken Shamrock, Goldust, and the Legion of Doom, and the Hart Foundation won. That was the last time they were in the ring together on television.
So what I think is interesting about that is Steve Austin never got a pinfall victory over Bret Hart. And
you're right.
When you think about Steve Austin coming out of this story with Bret Hart, he came out for the better. And that's not to say that Bret lost any steam, because I think 1996, 1997 Bret is some of the best work of any performer in WWF history. Mm-hmm. But Steve Austin came out the big star, and Bret didn't lose anything.
No.
And it's an instance where you can have a performer not get a victory, not right. get a decisive pinfall victory or submission victory, and still come out for the better if the story is told right, if the right. character development is there and done properly, which in this case it was.
Right. And you know, another foreshadow situation, not at this particular pay-per-view. I mean, there was so much foreshadowing, as Vince and Jim Ross were talking about Stone Cold Steve Austin building him up. But really, the month after at In Your House It's Time, Bret fought Psycho Sid for the WWF Championship. Shawn Michaels was on commentary during that match. And at one point during that match, Stone Cold Steve Austin came down to the ring to interfere, and he got Bret Hart. But during that match there, Owen Hart and the British Bulldog came down to Bret's aid. And those are two heels right there. And then that kind of foreshadowed a, you know, Hart Foundation reunion, to which we then saw later that 6 months later. And then, of course, the double face turn at WrestleMania 13. So much foreshadowing toward the going into WrestleMania 13, starting right here at Survivor Series 96.
Well, keep in mind, too, Mike, you brought up some good points in saying that there's some storyline foreshadowing.
Yep.
Vince McMahon being on commentary is so important to the WWF storytelling, not only at this time, but just in general, because Vince, as the owner of the company, knows where he wants to go with performers.
Right.
So he can slip these little details in. And when they had longer-term planning, they could... I mean, the story of the Mega Powers is the perfect example, but to your example where Bret, Owen, and Davey are all part of something because Vince, in his mind, knows that Austin's going to turn at WrestleMania. How he's going to turn might... Actually, you know what?
What's that?
They might have known that Austin was going to end up turning, but yeah. they probably didn't know how they were going to get there.
Right.
And maybe they saw Bret going to the evil side and reuniting with the Hart family, but they weren't sure how they were going to get there, because Bret and Austin, depending on who you talk to, wasn't necessarily planned for WrestleMania 13 until Shawn gave up the belt in Lowell.
True. The loss of Smile, and you know, and it also wasn't planned for Bret to the Montreal Screwjob a year in advance, because Bret had just signed the contract.
Right.
You know, 20-year deal.
Right.
So there's so much that changed within a matter of 10 months here. I do want to ask you, though, Jimmy, when you were watching this match, or, you know, even
around... I was so hyped for this match because I'm a Bret Hart guy. I'm a Steve Austin guy.
Okay,
like, I was into this.
So that's what I was going to ask you. Who were you rooting for?
So I was rooting for Bret to win, mm-hmm. but I was rooting for Austin to put on a good performance that would advance him.
Yep. Okay. But
and that's ended up, and that is ultimately what we ended up with.
Yep.
Because I love stunning Steve Austin. I liked him when he was the TV champion in WCW, where he had his wife, Lady Blossom, there. I thought the Hollywood Blondes with Steve Austin and Brian Pillman were a tremendous tag team. Steve Austin's series of matches with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat were great. And, you know, nobody can have a bad match with Ricky Steamboat, but Steve Austin, I always felt like, was this high-level performer.
Yeah.
And then Steve Austin's work in ECW, which was short-lived, was great. I thought the Ringmaster was, as Steve Austin would put it, just his foot in the door.
Yeah.
And then when he really got going, it's all systems go, and now here's the dream match with Bret Hart, who is one of my all-time favorites.
And he's got Austin 316, the brand now, and really just that was, you know, King of the Ring just a few months before that. And this was a time. I mean, you talk before.
So, Mike, it's good that you brought up King of the Ring, because this was the transition period, and this is something else to the Steve Austin side of the ledger, was he wasn't supposed to win the 1996 King of the Ring. Triple H was.
Exactly.
But because Triple H was the only one who could be punished for the curtain call, and for those who don't know, the curtain call is Shawn Michaels, who is the WWF champion, Diesel, who it was his last night at Madison Square Garden, last night in WWF, Razor Ramon, last night in WWF, last night at Madison Square Garden, and Triple H. They were all friends, and they all celebrated in the middle of the ring, which was a no-no in 1996. Good guys and bad guys never acknowledged each other as friends outside of the ring. They never acknowledged each other as friends inside a WWF ring. So using a wrestler insider term, those four broke kayfabe.
Yep.
Shawn can't be punished. He's the champion. Diesel's leaving for WCW. He can't be punished. Razor Ramon is leaving for WCW. He can't be punished. So Triple H, guess what? You're not winning King of the Ring, and we're going to program you with Henry O. Godwin, and you're going to be getting slot buckets on you for the next year.
And to even go further back with the kayfabe thing you were talking about, check out the story on Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Iron Sheik the night that they were arrested for the marijuana, or got pulled over for it, rather. A good guy and a bad guy not supposed to be breaking code like that. So, yes, Austin had his situation right there. Everything kind of fell into place and his career took off. He had the whole blue-collar mentality, the character. I've worked my ass off for years to get here. You know, South Victoria, Texas. Even going into WrestleMania 14 against Shawn Michaels. You know, again, the blue-collar.
There's something you don't see in a well-executed pile driver.
Well, we know who gave him the bad one not too long after that, the late Owen Hart, and it broke his neck. But going into WrestleMania 14, Stone Cold, the blue collar, and they had Shawn Michaels as the rich guy from San Antonio. But Austin really paid his dues, and it worked out for King of the Ring 96, where it just took off completely. I was a big Stone Cold fan. I loved the Austin 316 thing. I was never a real bad guy fan until, okay, maybe Undertaker 91 when he had the gray. I really love that when he beats Hulk Hogan. But even right here, that was probably the second time I was a huge fan of the bad guy, Stone Cold becoming that heel with Austin 316. And it just, a huge fan. And I'm so happy that his career took off after that. And the blood at WrestleMania 13 and just everything. This was a great setup here, and I wish these guys had more matches together. I really do.
Something else to the Steve Austin, as Steve Austin is about to attempt a superplex on Bret Hart, Survivor Series 1996, one of my favorite matches of all time, is Mike, have you ever pulled a gun on anybody?
A squirt gun.
A squirt gun, okay.
Yeah.
Because
let me say this. My father is a retired police officer. He always did bring a gun home and made sure we never got near it, though.
So, Brian Pillman pulled a gun on Steve Austin before this match began.
Right.
And I went back and I watched this, and it was really terrible.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you how I felt about it at the time, but I'm 37 and watching this, and it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what Meltzer wrote.
He broke in the house, right?
Yes. Here's what Meltzer wrote to give background on it. Quote, in something that was either a groundbreaking angle in wrestling or an act of total desperation, WWE ran a live angle on November 4th based on a scene from the movie Cape Fear, where Steve Austin broke into Brian Pillman's house and Pillman held him off with a gun as his wife was screaming. The angle was done to establish the WWF's new time slot 1 hour earlier on Raw, and to establish the idea that even though WWF matches are taped 3 out of every 4 weeks, that a major live angle will take place every week on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I will stop there and I will summarize this. They're at Brian Pillman's house, which was his real house.
But don't forget, they also started 3 minutes early, 7:57.
Yep, they did.
Right?
Yep, they did.
So go ahead, I'm sorry.
This was at Brian Pillman's real house. Austin was threatening to come in the back. Pillman pulled a gun out in case Austin got in. Austin had a fight with two students from Les Thatcher's training camp, who Les Thatcher was a longtime wrestler, longtime trainer. Yeah. Several minutes, Austin eventually broke a window on a door and got into the house. Brian Pillman pulled a gun on him, pointed at him. Kevin Kelly mentioned there were these explosions because you can't mention gunshots. Mm-hmm. The pitcher went out. They teased for the rest of the show that they would tell us what would happen. Kevin Kelly said that there were no explosions.
Yeah.
Austin did come back. The two were pulled apart. Pillman was hobbling, pointing the gun, swearing at Austin, which ironically enough was not edited off of the West Coast feed. So USA Network was obviously fine for this. Kevin Kelly, who you now know from his Ring of Honor play-by-play and from his New Japan play-by-play, was screaming in the background to call the police. The interesting thing here is the ratings. So WCW had a full point lead when they did the tease where Brian Pillman pulled out the gun and the signal went out. Curiosity did make a significant difference as the third quarter saw them neck to neck with a 2.8 rating. In Meltzer's opinion, the angle worked. Not nearly as well as the Bret Hart interview from weeks earlier, but it worked for a few minutes. So
yeah.
Gun angles in wrestling. I don't think it's happened since.
I think that's a good move, especially nowadays. You're not going to see that, especially where the company is as well, being much more family friendly. That is never going to happen as long as they're a public.
You know, I think actually the next gun angle that happened was the Bang 316 with Austin and McMahon, which turned out to be a toy gun.
Sure, sure. But it wasn't like he broke into his house and could have been arrested for, you know, invasion of private, anything like that. Oh my gosh. By the way, I just, as you know, Jimmy, I am a huge collector of wrestling nostalgia and so forth. And there was one point during the match where Brett and Stone Cold were right by the bike racks. And I noticed, oh, look at this, the $1 million dream. I saw the souvenir chair.
Brett just put the sleeper hold on Austin, and Austin's ramming him into the turnbuckles, trying to get out of it.
But check this out. Look at that stunner. He stunned him.
So that would be a jawbreaker, because of course the stunner would have Bret Hart's chin on Steve Austin's shoulder, and then the downward motion. This was Steve Austin's the top of his bald head going down onto Bret Hart.
Okay.
So that would be a jawbreaker.
But when Stone Cold does it, it's a stunner.
It wasn't in that case. Now here comes Steve Austin setting up for the $1 million dream, which he hadn't used in a long time.
No.
He's got it hooked in. Steve Austin probably choking Bret Hart since he is a bad guy, and Steve Austin would cheat.
Here comes your finish.
Here comes Bret kicking off the top rope back. Bret's powering Austin down. Austin's shoulders are down for a three count. And again, a sneaky favorite thing of mine is a wrestler kicking out at three. But Bret Hart did pin Steve Austin in what was a highly competitive match. And this match is really an important match for the career of Steve Austin. You can point to Austin 316, the King of the Ring win, things like that. But this match with Bret Hart was Steve Austin's main event opportunity. And the fact that Steve could hang and show he could hang with Bret Hart was the story. And it also tells you that a performer, in Steve Austin's case, can get over after losing. Again, if it's told properly.
And it worked. We know where Austin went with his career. Also, it's at Madison Square Garden. Bret's first match in 9 months, 8 months, whatever it was. You know, just, yeah, really, just a damn good match.
It was a fabulous match. The atmosphere, Madison Square Garden, the news events around it certainly helped define it. The fact that the match almost didn't happen is one thing, but these are two competitive guys, and they're both focused. They're both focused professional wrestlers, and a victory was very important to both of them. But a victory didn't necessarily mean as much for Brett or Steve, just the competitive match and the fact that they both hung well together and they put on a good showing for everybody.
There's one more thing that I was about to say.
Sure.
Yeah, the souvenir chair. I'm going to be looking for one of those souvenir chairs after we finish this podcast online.
How many of those chairs do you own?
Well, two from pay-per-views. Actually, a third coming. A Hell in a Cell one from Boston. And then I've got the one, two, three VIP ones that we were at. Too.
So is that the Charlotte Sasha one?
Yes. Yep. I cut a deal.
Do tell.
Well, let's see here. Friend of my brother's was at the event. Not as big a fan as you and I. And selling it to me in the secondary market.
That works.
Good deal, huh?
Mike, any closing thoughts to this match, this program?
It just brought, wow, look at this. Look at that moment right there. To 1 year later, you did not see Bret Hart shaking Vince McMahon's hand. We know that.
You saw him spitting in his face.
Yeah, and nearly killing him. It just brought back so many memories of me. I mean, I was in middle school when this match went down, and this was during the height of, you know, like when WWF was kind of, they were definitely in the back seat of WCW. They were doing everything they could to stay alive in the Monday Night War ratings here. And I thought this is when competition was at its best, pretty much. You know, I think it was good for both, very healthy, and WWF did the best they could. And it was great to see Austin's career propel here. And, you know, anytime they went to MSG, you always had a good show. And this is a really good Survivor Series 22 years ago this week.
Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com. And on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app, while you're there, check out all of the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. All of our podcasts are also available in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. So, Mike, next week we'll recap the 2018 edition of Survivor Series, which is a show that I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah,
I want to see AJ Styles and Becky Lynch both win their matches. And I remember last year's Survivor Series with this Raw versus SmackDown theme being one of the better shows of the year. Hopefully it will live up to the hype this year. Mike, do you have anything in particular that you're looking forward to next week's Survivor Series?
Yeah, I mean, going into, like I mentioned during the last year's Survivor Series, Brock Lesnar, AJ Styles really didn't care for that. But I hope that match is almost as good or even better than last year. So, and Becky Lynch, to see what she's doing right now with the women's title. I'm really excited for that, too. So, should be good. It's the last of the big major ones for the year, and hopefully it goes off with a bang. I know tables, ladders, and chairs next month, but this is kind of the end of the calendar
year. Yeah, TLC's in Boston. It's not.
That was a letdown, huh?
We had a good time, though, at the live event show, but we should have had TLC in Boston. For Mike Riley at Starge985, our show's Twitter is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. Until the Survivor Series post show, we will salute you goodbye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.